There was complete silence in the rear of the taxi as the lawyers rode into Georgetown. They had overslept and were late. The driver stopped in heavy traffic in front of the Royal Bank of Montreal. The heat and humidity were already stifling. Randolph Osgood was the banker, a stuffy British type. He greeted Avery like an old friend and introduced himself to Mitch. "Exactly what do you need, Avery?" he asked through his nose. "I need summaries of all the accounts of Sonny Capps, Al Kosha, Dolph Hemba, Ratzlaff Partners, and Green Group." "Yes, and how far back would you like to go?" "6 months, every account. I also need to establish 3 corporations, 2 for Sonny Capps and 1 for Green Group. We'll follow the usual procedure. For now, that's all." Osgood left the room. Avery closed the door and removed his jacket. He found coffee and poured himself a cup. "Mitch? I'm sorry about last night, very sorry. I got drunk and quit thinking. I was wrong to push that woman on you."
"Apology accepted. Don't let it happen again."
"It won't, I promise. The thing is, you know, I'm separated. We'll probably get a divorce in a year or so. I'm very discreet because the divorce could get nasty. There's an unwritten rule in the firm. What we do away from Memphis stays away from Memphis. Understand?"
"Come on, Avery," Mitch said. "You know I wouldn't tell."
"I'm not perfect," Avery insisted on going on. "Some in the firm are, believe me. They're machines, robots. I like to have a little fun. I admire your discipline. It's a strong man who can remain faithful to his wife with the temptations you had last night. I'm not that strong."
"Don't want to be."
"Look, Avery," Mitch began and momentarily faltered. He had awakened thinking of the woman. He had thought about her in the shower and the taxi, and he was still having trouble concentrating. "I'm not a holy roller," he went on, "and I'm not shocked. I'm not one to judge. I've been judged all my life." Osgood and a group of clerks entered the room with stacks of documents, and when they had left, Mitch flipped through a printout in the Hemba stack. "Who's this Dolph Hemba? I haven't heard of him."
"I've got a lot of clients you haven't heard of. Hemba is a big farmer in Arkansas, one of the state's largest landowners."
$12 million? That's a lot of cotton and soybeans."
"He has other ventures. Look, don't ask."
"Legal or illegal?" Mitch pressed. "Let's just say he's hiding $20 million plus interest in various Caribbean banks from the IRS.
"Are we helping him?"
Mitch waited for an answer. It was soon obvious there would not be one. At noon, Avery's woman was waiting at the condo for a little rendezvous. Mitch, instead of heading for a cafe, located the Georgetown Library, found the shelf full of old editions of the Daily Companion, and pulled the one dated June 27th. He took it to a window overlooking the street and glanced out. Then he looked closer. A man he had seen only moments earlier by the bank was behind the wheel of a battered yellow Chevette parked in a narrow drive across from the library. A native on a bicycle stopped next to him and took a cigarette. The man in the car, stocky, dark-haired, foreign-looking, pointed at the library. The native left his bike and walked quickly across the street. Mitch tucked the newspaper in his coat. He found a National Geographic and sat down at a table. He heard the native climb the stairs, see him, walk behind him, pause as if to catch a glimpse of what Mitch was reading, and then disappear down the stairs. Mitch returned to the window. The native was back with the man in the Chevette. A moment later, he rode away. Mitch opened the paper, scanned the story about the mysterious accident that had killed 2 American lawyers and their dive guide, made some mental notes, and left. The Chevette was still watching. He walked in front of it and headed in the direction of the bank. The streets were narrow and crowded with tourists. Mitch removed his coat and ducked into a t-shirt shop with a pub upstairs. Within minutes, the native with the bike was at the bar. Mitch sipped a Coke and scanned the congestion below. Then the Chevette turned the corner 2 blocks away and moved slowly beneath him. In the t-shirt store, he bought a pair of sunglasses, walked for a block, then darted into an alley. At the next street, he ducked into a gift shop and left through the back door. A large clothing store was full of tourists. Mitch came in through a side door. Back in the street, he saw nothing. He bought white shorts, a red knit pullover, straw sandals, a matching hat, nothing gaudy. The street was still empty. He asked the clerk to hold onto his suit and shoes for a while, gave her a 10, and asked her to call a cab. When it arrived, he hopped into the back seat and said, "A Bank's Dive Lodge." He threw a 20 over the seat. "Watch your mirror. Let me know if we're followed. The newspaper account said Philip A. Banks, age 19, son of Barry A. Banks, owner of the dive lodge, had been the dive guide. The three bodies had been found in 80 feet of water in full scuba gear. 20 minutes from Georgetown was Baden Town. The dive lodge was south of it. Mitch headed for the bar and ordered a red stripe and asked the bartender where he could find Barry A. Banks. The bartender pointed to the pier where a boat was docking. A short, wiry man, his brown skin leathery, stood next to the boat and barked orders at the deckhands. When everything was unloaded, he came into the bar and helped himself to a beer. The bartender said something to him, and he walked over to Mitch.
I'm A. Banks. Are you looking for me?
My name is Mitch McDear. I'm a lawyer from Memphis. The two men who died with your son were friends of mine. Could I ask you a few questions?
The police instructed me not to talk to anyone.
He studied Mitch a moment and seemed to soften. He pulled out a chair and sat. On his face and arms, Mitch saw the scars of a life at sea.
What do you want to know?
He asked quietly. What caused the explosion?
Perhaps an air compressor, perhaps some fuel. The boat was badly damaged and most clues went up in flames.
You sound as if there might have been something suspicious.
Suspicious? When the bodies were found, there were no burns or other injuries that would indicate they had been in the explosion. I guess that makes the bodies very suspicious.
What about your son?
My son was the best captain on the island. It is that simple. I cannot prove what I know to be true, so it is best if no one knows.
And I'd appreciate you not mentioning our conversation, Mitch said. Someone might follow me here and ask questions about my visit. Say we talked about diving?
A. Banks nodded.